Do you remember reading that classic by Dr. Seuss, Oh, the Places You'll Go? There are two, not one, but two exclamation points in the title, and it sets us up for the exciting adventure ahead. And Dr. Seuss takes us on a journey into the unknown, which is what life can be. Lots of sunshine, but he alerts us to expect times of darkness, which may never seem to end. Here's a scene at kind of a fork in the road in that book, with dark hooded figures looming in a threatening way. And Dr. Seuss writes, "All alone, whether you like it or not, alone will be something you'll be quite a lot. And when you're alone, there's a very good chance you'll meet things that scare you right out of your pants. There's some down the road between hither and yon that can scare you so much you won't want to go on. But oh, you will go, though the weather be foul. Oh, you will go, though your enemies growl. Oh, you will go, though the hackencracks howl. Onward, up many a frightening creek, though your arms may get sore and your sneakers may leak." Hold on to that image of the leaky sneakers as we proceed. But perhaps the best-known quote from the story, "You have brains in your head, you have feet in your shoes, you can steer yourself any direction you choose." That from Oh, the Places You'll Go by Dr. Seuss. And that is the hope, that the external world will not stop you from steering yourself and going any way you choose. Artist Helen Zugabe gives us more than 30 pairs of children's shoes. The shoes trace a path. The shoes are close to each other, but they're placed in a slightly irregular way. One shoe way at the front, two in the rear a bit behind the others. And if we stand back, the shoes on their irregular way into the unknown look something like migrating birds in flight. And that word, migrating, is a key for Helen Zugabe as she brings her Syrian migration series to northeastern Pennsylvania. 58 paintings rendering the forced migration of people from the Middle East during the Arab Spring. A series in conversation with the important migration series of African-American artist Jacob Lawrence from 1941. "I started painting shoes," she says, "at the height of the civil war in Syria, where 13 million people were forced to leave in such a short time, going to Turkey, going to Lebanon, going to Germany, going anywhere they could." Helen explained, "I thought about their shoes and what is in store at the end of their travails and their journeys. I thought about Dr. Seuss's book, Oh, the Places You'll Go," she continued. She described how children have and should have many dreams ahead of them, such as at one's graduation, thinking about what awaits them. What exactly are these kids' dreams? Fleeing from their home, going into a refugee camp, being born into refugee camps, Helen said. So she named the installation The Places They'll Go, and we see images of the installation in the Kennedy Center Hall of Nations. When you don't know the background of what I'm going for, people see, oh, cute shoes. Maybe my child could fit into those shoes. You just see little shoes, painted and beautiful, and will attract your attention. So I've succeeded in getting you to my shoes. Then you can read my art statement on what I'm really telling you about. But I got you there in the first place, which is half the battle. Instead of just turning around, not listening to me, and not looking. Helen Zugabe currently lives and works in Washington, D.C. as an artist. She paints primarily in gouache and ink on board and canvas, Her work has been widely exhibited in galleries and museums in the United States, Europe, and Lebanon. Her paintings are included in many private and public collections, including the White House, the World Bank, the Library of Congress, U.S. Consulate General, American Embassy in Baghdad, Iraq, the Arab American National Museum in Detroit, the Minneapolis Institute of Art, and the D.C. Art Bank Collection. Her work has been included in art in embassy State Department exhibitions all around the world. Heather Sienkiewicz, Associate Professor of Art and Director of the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, paid a visit to the WVIA studios, and we were able to speak by phone with Helen Zugabe.
Helen Zugabe's Migrations, and it's an exhibition that's focusing on the refugee experience after Arab Spring and the Syrian migration. Now, Helen has really established herself as such a voice for many of these folks and really depicts the humanistic quality of the journey. And we have the complete set of her Syrian migration series on display at the Sordoni Art Gallery.
When you were little, Helen, were you drawing in your notebooks when you were in school, perhaps? How did you notice that you really had a flair or were inclined to make art?
Well, what a great question. I was thinking about that. Given the way we grew up, which was always sort of constantly on the move, whether it was because of upheavals in the countries that we were in, certainly in the country I was born, Lebanon, as well as Iraq, we faced situations where we had to leave fairly quickly. And given that, it seems like my mom always supplied us with paper and magic markers, and we could do whatever we wanted. And my sisters and I, we amused ourselves ad infinitum because we didn't have any of our possessions with us, our games or our toys or our dolls when we were little. But I will say that also, given where we grew up, it was a constant sort of source of color and light and pattern, almost dizzying around us with the fabrics and the ceramics and the mosques and the churches. I think that it was not difficult to absorb all that and retain it somehow as I grew as an artist and grew into my career and my voice as a visual artist.
Did you have chances as you were moving, and it's a luxury sometimes to be mm-hmm. in a place, mm-hmm. but say when you were in Paris, did you get to galleries or any of the museums as you were making your way ultimately to the States?
Yes, and I would say I was a bit young for my age there in Paris, 16 and 17 years old, before I got accepted to Syracuse. And that is exactly where I decided that was what I wanted to do with my career. And given the newly found freedom, being in Paris without the environmental circumstances that we had left, I could go on the street by myself. I could take the metro. And fortunately, right near us was the wonderful, wonderful Museum Jeu de Paume. And it became a source of not only inspiration, but also of healing inadvertently. To me, I've found myself going there almost every day after my classes and would sit in front of Monet's painting of the Thames. And it makes me almost sort of shiver to think about it, but it was a solace that I had never had in my life. And being able to sit in that quiet museum, it was restorative on a level that I wasn't even aware of. And I would say, and I had an incredible professor of art there that helped me shape my portfolio for further admittance into Syracuse University Visual Arts Program.
And it was like a sanctuary, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. That's a perfect word.
And what a contrast, considering the way you grew up. The Lebanese Civil War was part of your background. and surely other times of conflict.
Yes, but in between, it wasn't all that. But definitely that was a big part of the way, I guess, I would look back at my growing up years. But not all of it, of course. I mean, we had in the most incredible, beautiful times as well when the bad stuff wasn't happening. Certainly, I don't want to leave anybody, all your wonderful viewers, with that impression that it was a constant sort of war. And we were lucky enough to evacuate and leave that situation, whereas a lot of other people could not. And the war lasted years after we left. So there were definitely years when it was quiet. And then it would begin to what we call troubles, kind of like the Irish situation with that. We called them troubles, little incidences here and there. And then they would amount to something where it was too dangerous to be living in that situation. But there were incredibly beautiful moments and times and years that we did spend, luckily.
I mean, I think that's something that has really struck me about Helen's work is she is, especially in this series right here, she is tackling things that are incredibly painful and nuanced and political. However, she's doing so in a way that it houses so much beauty and humanizes each person that this is impacting. And I love, for in fact, that she's bringing women to the center and children to the center of the experience, because I think it's often overlooked, the labor of women. And something that Helen really brings forward is keeping the normalcy while there's all of this tumult
chaos
around. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like chaos around. And I think that's a quiet resistance to kind of keep up the normalcy and continue to focus on who you are and maintain that heritage through whether it's drawing or storytelling or some kind of narrative, and continue on as the chaos continues to. I think one thing about Helen's work, we see a lot of color and patterning, and it refers so much back to the culture and the heritage of fabrics and architecture and painting. So it has such a resonance back to what she's referencing to. But because it is so vibrant and so beautifully done, it's also empathetic and hopeful. So she's taking things that are incredibly chaotic and difficult, but she's bringing the hope into it and also centering the experience of all, the entire family unit.
Helen, how did you find your way to be able to do what Heather has just described, where you were able to find the balance?
Well, I love how Heather described that, making sort of order out of chaos and a quiet resistance. I think that is something that I've come to. It's a part of my personality, actually. You can see that the work is very, very particular and very clean and very orderly in its way. And I think even on an unconscious level, now it's much more conscious if I think about it, but I think on that level, around me was so chaotic that is almost one way. And even after I was out of the particular situation, your mind is still chaotic and there's still a lot of stuff that is resonating in your body and your approach to the world and what's going on around you. And to have that ability to control what is on your drawing board, because life is so out of control. Mm. And there is no control. And certainly as a young person, you can't control it. You are swept along. And I think that a big part of how I've come to work as a painter is to make sense out of the chaos, including in these very moments and what we're experiencing globally and here in this country. It's helpful to be able to look at your drawing, your board, your illustration board, and say, okay, I have control over this painting. I can control the outcome of this painting. And I will also add something to your question, as well as Heather's incredible, insightful diagnosis of my work. I think that for me, experiencing what I have experienced in my life has created an empathy and a deep, deep sympathy. Empathy is the better word for people experiencing similar life-changing events. And I will just use the word war for that. With my father from Syria and me from Lebanon, I feel, and what has happened since in Syria as a result of the Arab Spring and back to the exhibition, I feel compelled to keep their voices alive. They can't speak for themselves, and I can try it and do it in the only way that I know how, which is through painting and then given the opportunity to actually speak about it. And as Heather notices, it primarily falls to the women and children to pick up the pieces of their lives and to find shelter and to find food and to try and find clean water and a safe place, whether it's a tent or what have you, because the men are gone or dead or fighting or not there to provide in their traditional role. And even going to my mother, she's the one. We had to leave my father in Lebanon. We were evacuated without him, my younger sisters and me. And my mom had to then pick up the pieces and find where we were going to live and get us in it. There's no comparison between certain situations. I definitely will be the first to admit that. But on the other hand, she was the one who had to take control of the family. You know, I feel like that empathy and that connection is certainly part of who I am at this point and how I'd like to portray them in paintings.
And Helen, why a series? There are 58. Heather mm-hmm. says we'll get to see 58 pieces mm-hmm. in this Migrations series. What kind of impact does the wave after wave after wave have? Certainly that's part of it, that it seems to be never ending.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And I began the series in 2015, kind of at the height of the massive, the largest humanitarian crisis, actually, the world had seen since the end of World War II. This massive wave, as you say, of people fleeing and displaced internally, but as well, 13 million people in a very, very short amount of time that overwhelmed the neighboring countries, the Arab countries, Lebanon, Jordan, Turkey, and certainly Europe hadn't seen such a wave of immigrants and migrants coming to their doorsteps. And so it's interesting, 58 paintings. I didn't necessarily think I would try and reach Jacob Lawrence's 60. He has 60 in his migration series. I didn't want to be repetitive. On the other hand, as you say, it's wave after wave after wave. And given the fact that Jacob Lawrence's final 60th panel says the migrants keep coming, and he painted that in 1941. And what astounds me, and what you're speaking about, is that here we are in 2025, we are experiencing these same cycles, these same movements of people, these same devastations, whether it's climate, whether it's starvation, whether it's war, whether it's violence, political or otherwise, the movement of people to try and find safe haven someplace. And I think even to use the railroad, and if you can envision a railroad going down the track and that momentum, that almost musical sound, I feel like he echoed that a little bit in his paintings. You could hear these repetitive movements, and the migrants kept coming and the migrants kept coming. And in a way, I did that as well in my series, because that's exactly what happened until now. Though the quote-unquote war and the regime has fallen, it's far, it's far, far from a perfect situation there.
Heather, yeah. Tell us a little bit about Jacob Lawrence and his series.
I would love to talk a little bit about the structure of Jacob Lawrence's series and something that Helen picks up on, because what she was just saying about the migrants keep coming, the migrants keep coming. Lawrence had also developed captions for each one of his panels.
Yeah.
And that's very, very conscious. And Helen has done the same, and in some cases literally uses Jacob Lawrence's same quote, "the migrants keep coming." And I think that is incredibly resonant, because it's like, okay, this is a different group of people, but aren't we all the same? This can happen to any group of people. And I think that's something that makes Helen's series that much more poignant, that it's building on the shoulders of Jacob Lawrence's Great Migration seminal series of 1941. Mm-hmm. Now we're seeing a continuation of that.
Yeah, and then I will jump in there as well. Jacob Lawrence, yes, he painted the struggle. It wasn't a bombing kind of a war, but it certainly was Jim Crow and segregation, and drought was a big part of that as well, and trying to find a better life for themselves and their families. In spite of these hardships that he paints so, for lack of a better word, beautifully and tenderly almost, even with the underlying, let's say, violence and ugliness. I mean, he talks about lynching. He just said there were many lynchings here. He doesn't go into anything about that, but he just says it because it was a fact. And that short declarative kind of statement, as Heather said, I tried to echo that in my own work and not make a judgment, not necessarily be political, because as Heather also said, this is a human condition, seemingly. I don't know. I have hope, but it's difficult sometimes. But you know, Jacob Lawrence, how he painted his subjects with beauty, with dignity, with resilience. And I also, for me, that was very important as well, to keep that in my panels as well. The little girl with her white bow.
The white bow gets me every time. It's so precious. I was hanging the show and I remarked to someone who was helping me, oh, this one is just so precious. And it's a little girl and she's holding a bouquet of flowers, and there's a big man next to her and they're holding hands. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is a child bride.
Yeah.
So I think something that you do, Helen, is you're struck so much with how precious and how sweet the characters are that you're depicting. And then
wham.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You realize the context and you're just like, oh my goodness, you know, and it really does tug at your heartstrings. I think the same thing goes for the young child who had washed up on the shore, which was a very famous photo in the press. And you do a similar version of that in one of your paintings. And I think it's something that we're all going to recognize. And then inserting that image that's kind of iconic to this whole struggle into the bigger picture is really, really key. I think it really helps as an entry point for many folks who haven't been following all the small details and nuances of this conflict.
Yeah, interesting. And that photo rallied the world for a little while. I mean, major, major artists like Ai Weiwei replicated that, whether it was on the beach or what have you, or did versions of that. I think of that painting as kind of like, though I'm not as familiar certainly with Vietnam, but the little girl who have no clothes on and she's running down the, she has napalm, I think, on her body. But I think that was like a look what's going on. Look what's going on. There are few photographs in world events that capture the attention. And I think Heather is referring to my little piece of the three-year-old Aylan Kurdi, who was crossing the Mediterranean and he washed up on the shore. His father remains alive. I can't imagine that. But he was washed up on the shore in Turkey and was found by a Turkish soldier. And he had his little shoes on. Anyway, a very poignant photograph, and I decided to include it in my body of work because, there again, this is the reality of the situation, and anyone can relate to the horror of losing a small child or a big child or their loved one.
And Helen, you mentioned the little lad's shoes that were on.
Mm-hmm.
Shoes are important, you say, in your work.
Mm-hmm.
They mean many things or signify many things, yes?
They do. They do. And for me, I look at shoes in two ways. I look at shoes that can run you away from danger, and I look at shoes that they can run you to your dreams. And my own personal experience with that, leaving Lebanon, I didn't know that we were going to be leaving forever when we did, but we were under curfew, and I may have mentioned this story to Heather, but there were going to be two different militias sort of going to have a shootout, and we were under curfew, so we hadn't been out of the flat in many months. And my father took the decision to just leave everything and just run. And so that's what we did. And my two younger sisters and I were running after my parents to their car. And one of my sisters shouted that the other one had lost one of her shoes. And I turned around. I saw the shoe. I don't remember. I've thought about it so much. I don't remember if I told my sister to pick it up or leave it and just keep running after my father. We were worried about risking his wrath. And also, given we were breaking curfew and all around us were the sounds of fighting and bombing and sniper fire and everything. So it was a pretty intense moment. And it stuck with me. And I've used the symbol and the idea of shoes in a few different ways over these years. Yeah. Thank you for noticing that.
Let's pick up, too, on laundry and clothes uh-huh. hanging from lines.
Yeah.
And even you're seeing the laundry lines in the picturesque, like, olive
grove. Yeah, olive grove, right. Yeah. But, you know, the laundry, there is, like, also what Heather was talking about. This is the idea of dignity, that even in the most horrible situations, they remain a pride and proud and want to remain clean and hygienic and wash the clothes. So there was definitely an intention about that as well in the irony of hiding. But and that's true, hiding in an olive grove where olives are symbols of peace. Just I couldn't get that image out of my mind.
You've said there are 60 pieces in Jacob Lawrence's series, The Great Migration, and you have 58, Helen. And we already have a sense about the power and the cumulative effect, one followed by number two, right up to number 58. Heather and Helen, how do artists go about keeping such series together when it's important for the impact of the work? That's really important for you, isn't it, as an artist, to try to hope that this body of work can remain what
intact.
It is?
Yes, I would love that. It's sometimes not completely practical. And even look at Jacob Lawrence's, where they were split up between the Phillips Collection and Museum of Modern Art. So the even numbers, I think, are in New York, I think, and the odd numbers are here. Yeah. So 30-30, though they've been reunited on occasion for a retrospective of the Migration series. But yes, you know, every piece fits together. It's on a very conscious level, though some now are in quite prominent collections. And I have to pay my rent, to be honest. So, I would love it if people just paid me money and I got to keep my paintings, too. That would be really, really good.
Maybe you can't keep them, but you've been loaning your works, or your works have been on loan. You have some connection to art and diplomacy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For many years now, through different curators at the Art and Embassies program, which is a program that John F. Kennedy began, it's a visual arm of diplomacy. And, you know, I think in the early days with the Cold War, they sent Dave Brubeck to Moscow, and he started playing Take Five. And all of a sudden, those Russians were tapping their feet and, you know, moving along and reaching an impasse through music that you can't do politically or through a speech. And I think visual art is the same. And I've been so lucky to have many, many times my work go out to different ambassadors' residences and embassies. And I've been invited as cultural envoy to go speak in various countries as an Arab American artist. And in that, I feel like you can agitate, even if it's one person or one conversation at a time, and feel that there is, you know, there's a separation necessarily between the administration or whatever. And here is a person coming over with their own ideas, who they are, their art to represent America and to extend a visual arm and ear and a conversation with people from the host countries. And it's always been such an incredible experience. It's one of the most beautiful things about the State Department and Art and Embassies program. I will sing their praises to the moon. They are really something else and believe in every aspect of their work because it's important. It's really important work.
Heather, as we wrap up, give us a sense of why we're so fortunate to have a chance to, through February 27th, to have her work with us, among us here.
Yes, so now you get to see the entire collection all in one place, all in the chronological order that Helen has designed it to be in, complete with citations that she wrote based on the Jacob Lawrence series. We also have a full color catalog, which also includes the series and three essays, one including one from me, but I've been working with a student this past year, Emily Romanowski, and she has written an essay, as well as one of my colleagues in the political science department, Dr. Andrea Mayerian.
Heather Sienkiewicz, Associate Professor of Art and Director of the Soledony Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, and curator of the show Helen Zugabe Migrations that will run through February 27th. We had the pleasure of speaking with this internationally celebrated artist, Helen Zugabe, who lives and works in Washington, D.C. And if you would like, there are listings on the website of all the events that are associated with this show. And you can find the Sordoni website at wilkes.edu/Sordoni, S-O-R-D-O-N-I, wilkes.edu/Sordoni. And the gallery is located at 141 South Main Street in downtown Wilkes-Barre, and visitor parking is available. That's Helen Zugabe Migrations through February 27th. For more information on the web, it is wilkes.edu/Sordoni, wilkes.edu/Sordoni. You just heard an interview, a conversation that we recorded this past October at the time of the opening of Migrations, Helen Zugabe. It's the Dr. Roy E. Morgan Memorial Exhibition this year at the Sordoni Art Gallery at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, as we have said, running now through February 27th. As the exhibition continues, the gallery anticipates the return of Helen Zugabe to campus, and she'll take part in several events, and there'll be details on that as the date gets closer. But this Tuesday, January 27th, there will be an Art in Context lecture, and it's titled When Home is No Longer Yours. And it's by Dr. Andrea Mayerian, who is Associate Professor of Political Science at Wilkes, and that's at noon this Tuesday. Also, an Art in Context screening of Making NEPA Home, and that's Wednesday, February 4th at 5:30. And we're very proud because Making NEPA Home is the original documentary from WVIA's filmmaker, Kara Washington. She produced, directed, and edited the documentary with cinematography by award-winning producer-director Alexander Monelli. Also, for young ones and their families, Art Venturers Pattern Palooza, that's Saturday, February 7th at noon in the gallery. Young people and their families will discover the world of art through creativity, curiosity, and hands-on fun. Each session offers a hands-on activity and story time with the Oosterhout Free Library. This time, they'll be exploring pattern, and that's because of the tradition from which the wonderful art of Helen comes from. There'll be two different activities. One will be looking at Bauhaus artists and then creating their own tessellations inspired by Islamic art. That's Art Venturers, Saturday, February 7th at noon. And then at the ending of the exhibition, as the run comes to a close, there will be an Art in Context panel discussion with the artist, Helen Zugay and Wilkes University faculty. That's Thursday, February 26th at noon. Then that evening, it's Cocktails and Culture at 5:30, and that features a closer look at the exhibition with a tour from the artist herself and a night filled with Lebanese cuisine and live music. Now, that's a lot to take in, but we wanted to give you an overview of what's in store. Again, the exhibition runs now through February 27th at the Sordoni Art Gallery, 141 South Main Street in Wilkes-Barre at Wilkes University. For more information, wilkes.edu, wilkes.edu.